Sam Duncan makes a really terrific first impression. When I met her first day at school last year, she looked calm. She didn't engage in the obnoxious declarations of individuality, the means with which the rest of us were attempting to differentiate ourselves from one another. She was cool. Her socks matched. So what a wonderful surprise when we read Sam's fiction and find her mind delightfully, surprisingly unpredictable. I'm not the only one who looks forward to her turn in workshop when I can read about the girl who initiates a neighborhood turf war or breaks into the bar at her parents' country club. Sam's characters are living out the denials and compulsions that we all feel pressing when our rational mind lapses, when we regress into childish behavior. The delight of Sam's work is that we as readers are able to find the same compassion and humor that Sam herself feels for her character's bad behavior. When a man lies compulsively to his girlfriend, we understand why. When a woman regresses into wearing her mother's old, worn-out bathing suit, we couldn't imagine it any other way. When reading Sam's stories, we surprise ourselves with our own levels of absurd understanding, her childishness, or perhaps, more importantly, above all, playfulness. Please join me in welcoming our Sam Duncan.
Nothing could be possible. Okay, I'm going to read a short story called If This Was What Adulthood Looked Like. Tim needed to distract himself from the grim reality of his loneliness. He'd just been dumped by a girl who was studying to be a physical therapist and could name every bone, muscle, and ligament in his shoulder complex. She had perfectly spaced hazel eyes, and she was the only girl he'd ever slept with, and she broke his fragile fucking heart. It was just after his sophomore year of undergrad, and most people were gone for the summer. No classes, no distractions. He took Being and Nothingness off his bookshelf, flipped it open, and landed on The Existence of Others, The Problem. He flipped again, and landed on the second attitude toward others. Indifference, desire, hate, sadism. He looked out the window and saw a car parked at the curb, and a put-together adult woman moving stuff into the recently vacated one-bedroom apartment below his. She looked like the type to be on the cover of a rock climbing magazine, hanging from a cliff by one hand in front of a streaked sunset and smiling at the beauty of all this. A few shirtless guys were drinking on the front porch of the house across the street and watching her lift her heavy things. The guy's house was always creaking and moaning as if it were haunted by sexed up ghosts who hung around to mock the dry spells of the living. They brought girls home from bars and the sounds of their urgent, boisterous sex floated through Tim's window at night. Tim looked like he played intramural soccer. He opened doors for people and he listened more than he spoke. He was a catch, yet women went after guys like them. The woman dropped a box of books in the grass, and through the open window, Tim heard one of these guys say, "That's a lot of books," and the rest laughed like assholes. The woman hunched over the lawn to pick them up and said, "Dickheads." When she managed to get a swivel desk chair wedged halfway out of the trunk of her sedan, wheels up, Tim walked down to help. He got the chair loose, then helped her carry the rest of her boxes inside. What a guy. Her name was Jen, and she was 40 years old. She used to work in a chemistry lab in Austin, had hated it, and was going back to school to study interior design. No husband, no kids. "Props on moving here by yourself, Tim said. "My shrink once told me that moving is the third most stressful experience humans can have, right behind death of a child and death of a family member." "Well, if the move gets too stressful, I can always kill my parents to distract me from the pain," Jen said, "like biting your lip when you get a shot." This was a state school where drunk frat guys pissed in the elevator at the 24-hour engineering library as a rite of passage. When the weather was nice, girls in bikinis sunbathed on the grassy commons area, the beach, while professors rushed past, eyes averted. Adult students like Jen were rare and conspicuous. Tim once had a lady her age in a political science course, and she'd use the word wanderlust every time she spoke in class. Younger students took note of this glaring repetition. Why didn't she just wander her ancient ass straight to hell? Before he knew what he was doing, Tim offered to split the internet with Jen. How much bandwidth could she possibly use? She'd pay the bill on time, and he'd have an ally in the building. The other dozen units were filled with undergrads who ripped bongs on the second floor balcony, then vomited into the courtyard below. That is so great of you, Jen said. Seriously, I really appreciate it. Her eyes were damp, probably just the stress of the move. My ex used to make me pay a bigger chunk of our gas bill because I wanted the house warmer than he did. Not all of us are dickheads, Tim said. The network is Euthyphrum. What's that? How do you spell that? She produced a memo pad. It's my favorite of Plato's Socratic dialogues. Wow, she said, nerd alert. The password is Winn-Dixie, no caps, all one word. I'm not even gonna ask, she said. Tim's only regular social engagements were coffee dates with his older sister, Claire, who patiently listened to his rants about his fear that he'd never find someone. He wanted a good girl, someone who was smart, funny, pretty, confident, and tallish. Is that really so much to ask? Actually, yes, Claire said, but she was a loving, charitable sister and a lesbian. Don't worry, she said. If I meet a nice bisexual pixie who fits that description, I'll send her your way. A lady moved into the apartment below mine, he said. Jen, she's 40. It was the first time in a long time that he'd entered the apartment of a nice woman who wasn't his sister. It was progress. He said, also, we're sharing the internet. Claire grabbed his wrist and lifted his arm in the air like a boxing referee declaring him the champ. She clanged her empty espresso glass on the table and shouted, ladies and gentlemen, I proudly present to you the undisputed champion of whatever. She was pretty enough to get away with shit like this. She had short black hair and clear pale skin. Tim's friends in high school had always drooled over her, even after she'd pulled them into a close hug and whispered, I like women. Tim threw his other arm up. Maybe it was just the triple shot, but he was feeling optimistic. Tim and Jen split the bandwidth and the bill right down the middle, and she dropped the check through his mail slot once a month. The edges of their lives overlapped, and he tried to be considerate. Whenever he swept outside his door, he swept all the way down the stairs and cleared Jen's doormat, too. He began to think of her as a kind of teammate. One night, he heard yelling from below. The guys across the street were leaving to hit the bars. There were elevators to be pissed in. They stood on the sidewalk holding beer cans and wearing heinous button-down shirts. He saw Jen standing in front of her door, right below his window, and one of the guys hollered, hey girl, wanna come out and get a drink with us? She said, no thanks, have a good night, but the guy kept yelling. He grabbed his crotch and yelled, go fuck yourself. His friends pushed him down the block, mouthing sorry over their shoulders. Tim ran down and knocked on Jen's door. She cracked it and the golden sliding chain hung right beneath her teary eyes. Are you okay? He said. I'm fine, she said, just morons being morons. I'm so sorry, I hate those assholes, Tim said. They lived there last year too. Why don't we drink some beer and talk about how shitty people are? I'm really okay, just tired. She yawned for emphasis and glanced at her watch. It's 11 o'clock on a summer night, Tim said. What else have you got to do? Besides, I'm the one who needs drinking therapy. Jen's apartment was similar to his in layout, but nicer in every other way. It had newer carpet and fancy silver handles on the kitchen cabinets. Red throw pillows matched the red clock above the stove. If this was what adulthood looked like, he wanted in. Area rugs and end tables and several huge cases of beer, so she must have had a Costco card. They got drunk on wholesale. So Jen, what's your favorite color, Tim said, only slurring a little. If you were stranded on a desert island and could take only one color with you, what would it be, he said. Claire liked to ask questions like this when she was drunk. Would you rather have fins for feet or gills on your neck? You can't have both. These questions were a way to gauge a person's character. I guess I'd bring red, Jen said, just in case the island had crappy sunsets or no red flowers. She looked tipsy and held her beer bottle up to the light. Red was the color of royalty and passion and hearts. Dating a woman like Jen must be nice, eating fresh seafood and listening to the radio. There wouldn't be any bullshit. Actually, I misspoke, Tim said. I meant what book? What book would you bring? A week after the night of drinking, the buffer time on Tim's videos began to drag. The hourglass on his PC churned and churned. It took him 6 minutes to send an email without attachments, and Jen was the only possible explanation. After 3 days of this, he pulled the plug on the router. When Jen answered her door, she had dark bags under her eyes and the moon-faced look of someone who emerged from the digital world to realize that the physical one still existed. "Sorry to bother you," Tim said, "but the internet has been really crappy lately, and it finally just cut out on me. Are you having any problems?" He looked over Jen's shoulder at her desktop, big and old like a control panel at NASA. Jen eased the door closed to block his view. "Actually, mine cut out too," she said, "when I was checking my email. Do you mind if I take a look?" He sat down at her computer, and a video was frozen there. Three birds in a nest the size of a queen bed. They looked upset. Tim flipped through her tabs. There was also an osprey nest and a great blue heron nest. Both live feeds frozen. The osprey were lying face down as if they'd been shot execution style in the back of their little heads. The herons were mid-hop, all fighting for food from the giant mommy heron. Their long beaks looked sharp as daggers. "I thought you were checking your email," Tim said. "Were these all streaming at once?" "Yes, all in HD, all at once. "Okay," Tim said, "here's the truth. I unplugged the router because you were taking up all of the internet." He'd never reprimanded an adult woman before. She stood before him looking timid, shocked, and sorry. He imagined her kneeling in front of him and kissing down his chest, unzipping his jeans, and he felt disgusting for thinking this. "I'm sorry to be a jerk," he said, "but you really can't stream all in HD at once." "I'm sorry," she said. "One nest is fine, but I mean three nests?" "I'll just watch one from now on," she said. "They're so fascinating, I'm addicted." "It's fine," he said. But instead of lying and pretending that the internet cut out, "why not just tell me next time I piss you off," Jen said. "We're both capable of handling conflict like adults, aren't we?" All day, squawks and chirps echoed through Jen's vents and into his apartment. Tim walked from room to room and stepped in all the creakiest spots so that Jen would hear him pacing. For months, he'd been tiptoeing around so as not to disturb her. Adorable. Maybe she'd set him up with a niece from Vermont. Around midnight, he grabbed the bottle of wine that had been sitting on top of his fridge for 3 months, and he wiped off the dust. He put on cologne, one spritz, not overbearing. He knocked on Jen's door and waited. His hand was sweating so badly, the bottle threatened to slip and shatter on her welcome mat. When she opened the door, he was clutching it to his chest with both hands. "Jen, how's the internet treating you?" "All good," she said. "I'm sorry I snapped at you before." "Me too," he said. "Listen, I've got this wine, and I thought maybe we could watch the birds together, if you wouldn't mind the company." She looked past him into the empty street, looking for people who might see her sneak a younger guy into her love nest. He didn't want to be snuck in. He wanted her to yell so that everyone could hear, "My God, I thought you'd never ask." "Come on in," she said at a normal volume, but with a smile. "Good enough." They dragged the couch in front of the computer screen and drank wine from wine glasses, flicking among the bald eagles, osprey, and great blue herons. The three nests were in different parts of the country, and the live feeds were sponsored by a National Conservation Society. They settled on the great blue heron nest, where 5 one-month-old chicks had hatched. The babies were vicious and scaly. Their dinosaur ancestry was undeniable. When a parent came home with a fish or a snake for them, the youngsters made terrible screeching noises. In fighting for food, they closed their long, sharp bills around each other's skinny necks, which were thin and fleshy like umbilical cords. How did their heads not come off? And what kind of birds was this mother raising these babies to be? They ripped the fish to pieces, and the sound of the kill made Jen's speakers buzz. She hardly blinked as she watched. "You're loving this, huh?" Tim said. "Absolutely. It's totally gross but fascinating. They're not at the top of the food chain like we are." "True. I don't know what it feels like to have my parents puke dinner into my mouth," Tim said. "We've hardly lived," Jen said. He wanted to mute the birds and kiss her in the bluish glow of the screen. He put a pillow on the couch between them, curled up, and felt the hairs on top of his head prickle. Were they touching her leg or just the pillow? He moved toward her in what he hoped were imperceptible increments. When he got up to leave at 2 a.m, Jen said she was glad that he came over and she'd love to do it again sometime. He went to hug her goodbye, and she moved her head from side to side in a confusing way, and he ended up kissing her cheek right to the side of her lips. When he got back to his apartment, he felt tipsy from the wine and the sickening sway of the heron's necks constantly moving like wheat in the wind. He lay in bed and thought of the great blue heron mother at the edge of the nest, slender and beautiful against the dark swamp stretching out below her. He wanted to lure a heron to the tiny fish pond in the courtyard, forgotten and mossy, so that Jen could see it up close. He'd bring nature to her doorstep, a grand pre-romantic gesture. He said aloud in a bad English accent, "I shall have her, she shall be mine." Really, the plan was not that outlandish. Great blue herons were abundant in central Ohio. They hunted on the banks of the Olentangy. Their silhouettes coasted over the expressway at dusk, and their shit splattered in such great quantities as to obscure entire windshields like buckets of paint thrown by activists. They were there. The problem was luring one into the courtyard. Tim began doing some research. Great blue herons eat fish, he learned. He watched a video of a woman who'd gotten all of her koi eaten by a great blue heron. The video was filmed and narrated by the woman's daughter, who said, "This is my crazy mom reacting to her fish getting killed by a bird," as her mother scrambled around a backyard pond yelling, "Sonny, Sonny." Sonny had been a $1,000 golden koi. That afternoon, Tim bought 3 koi fish and a 15-pound bag of birdseed. The fish were all injured and repulsive, fat, sparkly, and gimpy. They were a bargain, an easy prey for a heron. And the birdseed would transform the courtyard into a place for all kinds of birds to congregate and socialize. The fish pond was the size of a baby pool, with no decorative shrubs or rocks surrounding it. Tim scooped some algae from the surface with cupped hands and plopped the 3 new koi into the water. He tore a hole in the bag of birdseed and dragged it through the grass to leave a ring of bait around the pond. Everything was in place. He knocked on Jen's door and said that he had a surprise for her. He covered her eyes and guided her to the pond. "Voila! I'm going to lure a blue heron for you, and I bought some fish to use as bait," he said. "What do you think?" Jen grabbed his arm to steady herself and leaned over the pond to see the fish swimming in their crippled, floppy circles. He slipped his hand into hers as gently as he could so as not to startle her. "I love it. How did I get so lucky as to move in below you?" He squeezed his hand. "I hope this works." Over the next week, all kinds of smaller birds got their fill. Pigeons, robins, bright red cardinals. Tim and Jen spent their days in the corner of the courtyard or sitting inside with their faces pressed to a sliding glass door. To keep their spirits up, they watched hours of the heron nest online and held hands as the first fledgling took flight over the swamp. Tim started worrying. What if a bird never showed? It was like he'd asked Jen to come on a road trip to some secret, mind-blowing destination, like a pretty waterfall, but then he'd gotten lost, and they were still driving. "It'll happen," Jen said. "We just have to be patient." She pulled him into a huge hug against the brick wall. It was as if she'd read his mind. He kissed her deeply. She was skilled. They put their foreheads together and stood with their eyes closed. He raked his fingers through her ponytail. He slid his hands into her back pockets. How had he come to want this woman? She'd probably been with a dozen men and loved at least a few of them. They probably had cars and careers and sex, adult relationship things. Mid-July, summer almost over, not a cloud in the sky, not a single heron. Tim canceled a lunch date with Claire. He said that he was exhausted from bird watching. And while he had her on the line, did she happen to know any ornithologists? "Dear Lord," she said, "listen, you're coming to my place for dinner tonight, and you're bringing this woman. It's about damn time I meet her." "Absolutely not," Tim said. "That would be the most awkward." "Because she's twice your age," Claire said. "Either you come here or I'm showing up at your door." Jen said she had errands to do and would meet him at Claire's. So Tim drank wine while his sister sat before the oven, squinting through the thick glass to make sure the beef tenderloin wasn't burning or drying out. "That'll give you brain tumors," he yelled into the kitchen. "You're thinking of microwaves," Claire yelled back. "This'll just burn my face and maybe blind me." He went and sat on the kitchen floor beside her. "Please don't make this awkward with Jen, okay?" "She must be something special," Claire said. "Is she your girlfriend? Your woman friend? Are you just one in a long line of young lovers?" "Look, I have no idea, Tim said. "Can this even work? She's probably got a secret husband somewhere." "Look, most people suck," Claire said, "and you've found someone you like. Just go with that for now." She stood up to stir something on the stove. "And I've got your back. I probably wouldn't kill this lady if she hurt you, but I'd egg the shit out of her house. We live in the same building," Tim says. "So I'll egg her car instead." 30 minutes late, there came a knock on the door. Claire clicked across the bamboo floor, opened it, and there stood Jen. Her hair was purple, and there was a baguette sticking out of the back of her tote bag. "Sorry I'm late," she said. "I hope I didn't keep you two waiting." Tim gave her a hug and a kiss on the cheek. She had purple flyways. Jen and Claire shook hands like women, delicately, their hands moisturized but not sweaty. "You must be Jen," Claire said. "I like your hair." "Oh, thanks. Had a bit of a meltdown today." "Well, you look fantastic," Claire said. She did look fantastic. "A meltdown?" Tim said. Jen pulled a bottle of wine out of her purse and handed it to Claire. "I hope you like red. I was going to make bruschetta, but I got distracted. She pointed to her hair. I brought the stuff so we could make it fresh. The woman made their way to the kitchen, and Tim followed. They talked about traffic and dog breeds while they assembled the bruschetta and shuttled food to the table. Tim and Jen sat opposite Claire. White candle wax pooled on the dark wood between them. "So you said you had a meltdown," Claire said. "Is everything okay?" "Yeah, I just started panicking about school and what the hell I'm doing with my life, so I dyed my hair. I read online that it's what people do when they feel like they need control of their lives." "Yeah," Claire said. "When Tim got dumped, he burned his bed sheets." Jen said, "Aw, poor Tim." She put her hand on his shoulder. "When was this?" "Oh, 2 months ago," Claire said. "Anyway," Tim said, "how's that hair dye working?" "My scalp burns, but I think that's because I left the stuff in too long," Jen said. "I do feel stronger, though." They ate Jen's bruschetta as a side dish. It was good, but not world-famous good. They drank 2 bottles of red wine and all had gray teeth. The wine made Tim anxious. Claire was chewing her beef in a bitchy, worrisome way. He rubbed Jen's knee to ground himself, and her leg muscle flexed under his hand. He wondered if it was a signal, and if so, of what. Claire said, "I'm glad to finally meet you, you know. Tim and I are very protective of each other." "That's how it should be," Jen said. "He's a good kid." "I wouldn't say I'm a kid," Tim said. "I'm 21. They trust me with alcohol. I watch Mad Money." Claire said, "Why did you leave Austin anyway? I'm curious about the catalyst." "I quit cigarettes after seeing a Theraflu commercial. There's always a catalyst." "I mean, you left a job, presumably friends and family, and now you're dating my brother. Lots of moving parts here." Tim said, "Jesus, Claire, why don't we get the espresso going? Who's ready for tiramisu gelato?" Jen said, "No, it's fine. Just a long, sad story. But basically, I ended a very unhealthy relationship and then dragged myself up here to heal. And Tim's been so kind." She said, "I guess it must be weird to hear that your little brother is hanging around with an old broad like me." 40 isn't old," Tim said. "The way modern medicine is going, we'll live until we're 110. He tried to stare Claire down, but she wouldn't look at him. No one would look at him. "It doesn't weird me out," Claire said. "I'm just trying to figure out if I should jump on that train a day younger." "So far, I'm a huge fan," Jen said. "We built a bird sanctuary and we watch animals on the internet all day." She squeezed Tim's shoulder. "It's exactly what I've needed. I say go for it." Claire and Jen went on talking and Tim brought them gelato. While he waited to be invited into their women talk, he watched it melt. When Jen said she should be going, she and Claire hugged like old friends. Tim followed her into the hall. He said, "I could come with you, leave my car here. I feel like we hardly talked." He said, "You should come over to my place, maybe. Claire is great. You should hang out for a while and give me a call later." She kissed him. This was really fun. With his previous girlfriends, Tim had been able to imagine a future. Sometimes he could see as far as marriage, dog, and house. Other times he could only envision dinners, sex, and breaking up. But those were girls, not women. With Jen, he had trouble imagining much at all. He could imagine sex quite vividly, and maybe he had a vague notion that they'd see foreign films or start a workout routine. Maybe she didn't care to look forward. When he got back from Claire's, Tim corralled the 3 koi, scooped them out of the pond with plastic grocery bags, and relocated them to his deep stainless steel kitchen sink. He rolled up his sleeves and lazily dragged his fingers through the water. The fish rolled over one another and their scales flashed against the shining sink bottom, 2 orange and 1 milky white, all with black cow spots. None of them could swim straight, whether because of brain damage or physical injuries, but they were still powerful and thick as fists. They gaped at his fingers, hoping for food. He no longer had it in him to let them get eaten on his account. They could stay in his sink for now. He went down and knocked on Jen's door. He said he'd just checked the pond and it was empty. The heron must have come during dinner. He grabbed her hand. "I lured you a heron," he said. "We got a fucking heron." She wore the combination of red wine teeth and purple hair with confidence. She fell across the threshold and into his arms. She took off running toward the pond to see for herself, and Tim let himself get dragged along by the hand. Thanks.